Welcome to New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and this program is about the evolution of consciousness and the evolving spirituality that's happening in the West. And happened to be in Los Angeles this week, and I ran into an old teaching I was a part of and connected with, the teachings of Swami Kaleshwar, where I spent, I think it was the winter into the spring of 2000 in the ashram in Penaconda. And then I've been in and out of touch. You can look at some of my interviews with Swami Kaleshwar on my YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/newrealities. But in LA, I ran into a great teacher of this beautiful, inclusive teaching that was part of this young Swami from India, Swami Kaleshwar. We'll talk about his life and his teachings and his legacy, really. So I'm here today with Julianne Boyce.
Hello.
Hi, welcome to New Realities.
Thank you so much for having me. This is just, I say, by divine appointment only, as bumping into each other. This is like the first talk I gave publicly about this knowledge this year and in several months. And just, it was such a sweet kind of a divine meeting. And at the Thunderbolt Bookstore in Santa Monica.
Is that what the bookstore is called? I just wandered in there because it looked like a good bookstore. So,
Well, you were just wandering in.
Well, I was there before, but I wanted to check out some books. I wanted to show my friend the space. Anyway,
oh,
there you were. I recognized the picture of Swami Kaleshwar because he actually visited me in New York in the flesh, and we put on a program for him on 9/11/2000.
Wow.
December 11th, 2000. I hosted him in New York. But anyway, let's tell people who Swami Kaleshwar was and why he's so important. I mean, you know him better than I. So would you sum up what his work was?
That's the million-dollar question. We were all asking, who are you, really? And over the years, he revealed different parts of himself to us. There were different aspects of his divine incarnation. When he was born, it was said that for the first 7 years of his life that he didn't drink any water.
Really? And, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Mm. And then at the age of seven, when, you know, he started to, and he didn't speak, or he had, you know, he didn't speak, and he was just, it was just a drop of water here. He wasn't eating, and his mom thought, obviously, this is not normal for a child to be like this. And it was truly a divine birth. But we were told that different sages and saints had basically told his parents that a very special divine soul would be born unto his mother.
Right.
And so, sure enough, the prophecy came true. And but his parents, obviously, it's like, hey, if a child like Jesus is being born to you, how do you handle a child like this?
Mm-hmm.
And so they were getting to know him. And as we got to know him.
But his parents were also followers of Satya Sai Baba. Okay. Were they followers?
Yes, they were
so
followers.
So they were already kind of very spiritually based.
You know, one part yes and one part no. I mean, his family wasn't, yes, they did know Satya Sai Baba, but overall, they weren't that religious. Like, he didn't even know who Shirdi Sai Baba was. And some of you guys probably have never even heard of who is Shirdi Sai Baba.
Shirdi Sai Baba was a great saint.
Right.
Really, so, one of the amazing people of ancient, mm-hmm. of not even, in the 1890s, I guess, right? 1900?
Who left his body in 1918. But to get to know Swami yes. is to know Shirdi Sai Baba. And I'll just, can I share a quick story?
Yeah, well, that's the key about, you know, the Shirdi Baba and the Kaleshwar connection. That was what opened up. Yeah, share that story.
Because at the age of 14, imagine this, you become totally enlightened. And so Kaleshwar was studying for a school examination and in an abandoned temple. And, you know, he saw this homeless beggar who was asking for alms. And so he put some coins and gave it to him the first day as before he walked into the temple to go study. The second day, same thing. And the third day, you know, the next time he came, the beggar was asking for money. And he said, I don't have anything. And the homeless guy looked at him straight and said, yes, you do. You have 50 rupees in your pocket. Mm. It's equivalent to about a U.S. dollar. And this is like, you know, 20, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so he searched in his pocket and he, sure enough, had 50 rupees. He was like, how did you know?
Mm. He didn't even know he had it.
No, he was like, he didn't know. And so he said, my name is Shirdi Sai Baba. I know everything about you.
So, really? Oh, yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so he said, he got kind of scared. He's like, I mean, you can imagine if a stranger is starting to tell you about yourself, you know, and you don't know who they is. It can be, it can be weird. And so he was like, I got to go. I got to go home to dinner to my mom and dad. And so Shirdy said, here, why don't you sit down and have some of my food?
Right.
And he gave him his, he showed him his begging bowl that had rotten food in it. And he's like, you're eating that? That's disgusting. Mm-hmm. So Shirdy tapped the bowl 3 times with a stick, and he turned it into this most amazing smelling food. Mm-hmm. And he invited Kalishwar to eat it, and he said it was the best food that he had ever eaten. Mm-hmm. And long story short, he went to go wash the bowl afterwards, and when he came back, as he turned around, Shirdi Baba had disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And he was looking for him, but Shirdi Baba had left his stick there, the one that he had used to do this amazing, you know, shifting from the one form into another, which is a miracle. So he witnessed this amazing miracle, and from that day, amazing abilities just spontaneously had been opened in him. He could heal people supernaturally, and Shirdi Baba was coming to him in his dreams and teaching him.
He didn't know even know who Shirdi Baba was.
No. So he came home, he's like, mom, and he told her about the experience, and she thought he was nuts. I mean, you can imagine. She's like, there's no way that could have happened, because Shirdi left his body, and in the West we call it dying. In the East, when you leave your body consciously, it's called samadhi, when you leave a piece of your soul in your body.
And when did Shirdi leave?
1918, in October.
And this was what year that he visited Kalishwar?
It was about when he was 14 years old, and he was born in 1973.
Oh, so that was
so 19- mid-80s.
1987, I guess.
Just do the math.
Right, but yeah, no. Yeah. So that's so he came to him in 87, even though he wasn't here since. Okay, so and that was pretty much a miracle.
That was his awakening day, and that was truly the day that his whole life began, and who he really is. Even he was discovering, and so he was led to divine.
He kept the stick though, didn't he?
He absolutely.
Where's that stick now?
That's a good question. I would love to know myself.
No, you should have that stick, right?
Well, I'm sure if he wants me to have it, I'll have it. And this is true of any divine gift or power object. If you're supposed to have something, it'll come to you.
Right.
So,
well, but didn't he leave some clothes there too?
Shirdi Baba?
Yeah.
No, he left the stick, and that was it. He didn't take his clothes off.
Because Swami used to talk about the power of somebody's clothes or something like that.
Yeah,
right?
And it does contain their energy. And he did inherit unbelievable power objects from Shirdi that contain his energy.
Like what else did he get from Shirdi?
Well, the brick was one of them.
The
brick. Do you know about the brick?
No.
So the brick was...
But I just have to say, power objects hold, let's say, divine energy or holy energy, blessings, and it has the ability, these relics, which they're known actually in the West, in the Christian understanding, there are relics that have power.
Mm-hmm. And there are different kinds of power objects. Mm-hmm. There are naturally created power objects.
Like what?
Such as peacock feathers. Or if you were in
a power object?
It's a power object. They ward away evil spirits.
Oh.
Another one are black rocks that are in the shape of an egg. Like they're round.
And lingams?
Lingams. But if you go to like a riverbed or you go to the beach, and it has to be solid black, not speckled, but solid black. Those you can absolutely use to decharge negative energy, and you don't have to clean it. It automatically is purified. There are all sorts of so those are some examples of natural power objects. And then there's the realm of supernatural power objects, where saints like Shirdi Sai Baba, Jesus Christ, Krishna, Buddha, where they consciously took their austerities power, their unbelievable supernatural abilities, and they consciously put them into certain objects, and they hid them or they gave them to certain people to hold and pass on over thousands of years and multiple generations.
So what was the brick?
Okay, so the brick was given to him by his master.
Given to Kalishwar?
No, it was given to Shirdi.
Oh.
But yes, it did come to Kalishwar, but it was originally a power object of Shirdi Sai Baba.
And Shirdi had a teacher, master?
Yeah.
Who was Shirdi's teacher?
His name was Vankusa.
Was he living in Shirdi, in this region of Shirdi?
No, he wasn't. They were actually in this unbelievable power spot on the globe called Penaconda.
They were so in Penaconda. Shirdi was in Penaconda?
Shirdi was in Penaconda. One of his power spots is in Penaconda.
I did not know. That's why Swami Kaleshwar built his ashram in Penaconda.
One of the reasons. But it's considered the Nada Bindu of the planet. So let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. The Nada Bindu. See, Kaleshwar is great because his dharma, his life purpose, was to return the ancient knowledge that Jesus had, and not just Jesus, many masters before him. But this, as in the West, we commonly, like, we honor Jesus. And it's amazing that today, the same healing teachings, life practices, meditations that Jesus himself did to have what he had, we now have. They've returned after 2,000 years. So Swami's greatness is that he returned the Jesus channels to the globe. And that's
like
what I teach.
He returned the practices of Jesus, you're saying Swami did?
That, yes.
Like, what practices were those?
Well, everything that I teach.
But they're Hindu mantras.
No, they're not Hindu mantras.
Oh, they're not.
And this is what people look at. And even Jesus's name is in part of these mantras. So, but it's honoring all the traditions, you know, melting into one.
Okay.
So people have looked at it and judged it and misunderstood it and didn't even see the truth of the energy underneath.
Okay.
So let's talk about this brick real quick.
Yes, because I didn't know Shirdi Baba ever visited Penaconda.
One of his power spots there.
Okay, so what was the brick?
Okay, so now in spirituality, one of the corners is to master the art of sacred sound and sacred form, mantra and yantra, which creates an unbelievable new high divine energy.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, Shirdi didn't like to meditate. He was happy serving his master.
Shirdi didn't like to meditate.
He didn't like to sit down and meditate. It was really hard.
I don't blame him. It is hard.
Well, once you learn how to do it, it's a bliss. But until you get to the bliss, it's work.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in the earlier years. Shirdi did meditate a lot and most of the latter part of
Shirdi
his life.
Shirdi did some amazing miracles, I have to say. Do you remember hearing the stories of taking his intestines out and hanging them on?
I know, it
and washing
crazy,
them?
People.
It does sound crazy, but
yeah,
that's what a real master can do.
Absolutely. He was beyond the five elements. And this brick was, you know, long story short, the master Venkusa, this guru, was teaching these boys the ancient knowledge, and they were totally jealous of him because he got to spend a lot of time around Venkusa. Mm. And they were like, well, we want to spend time around him too.
Venkusa was a real master.
He was a real master in a real body, an unbelievable enlightened master.
This was in sometime in the 1800s then, I guess.
Yeah, in the late, yeah.
Mid,
because he was a young boy, and Shirdi was in his 80s or so when he took off. But
in 1918.
And his birth date, his exact birth date, is unknown to this day. Mm-hmm. Some speculation.
The other incredible thing about Shirdi is that both the Hindus and the Muslims both worshipped him as a saint.
Right. And they also, the Christians and, you know, different religions really resonated with him because he was truly a seed for, like, the unity of all beings and people.
He looks like someone you would see on the street. He actually looks African-American. You know, he does.
They're all black and white photos. Yeah.
I mean,
but some say that. It's true. And he tries, depending on who you are, he looks different. So
yes.
This brick was basically, these kids were so jealous, one day they conspired to kill him.
Really?
And so it's talk about massive jealousy. They were like,
not very spiritual, was it?
No, it's not. You think you're in training in a spiritual school. And welcome to being a human, you know, being in a human body. So they conspired, these boys got together, and they threw the brick at Shirdi Baba when he was a boy. I hit his head and he was bleeding profusely.
Oh.
Like, and then he called out in his heart, Venkusa! And when you call on a divine soul with an open heart, and anyone can do this even now, you can just call out Kaleshwar or Shirdi Sai Baba or Jesus or Mother Mary or Kuan Yin. Anyway, when you call on them sincerely for help, with your open heart and faith, he came. And basically, he suspended that brick in the air. And it freaked the boys
out.
After the brick hit him, but he was in his heart immediately calling on Venkusa, and supernaturally, a miracle basically happened, where that brick was spinning in the air, you know, hovering. And yeah, so basically Ben Kusa gave it to Baba. He told the boys basically their fate was in Baba's hands, and this was a test to Baba to see if he would forgive them for even trying to kill him.
And he did.
Of course he did. And that's what was but part of
the how did the brick, what happened to the brick, and how did it end up with Kaleshwar?
Okay, so Ben Kusa gave the brick to Baba, and that was his soul, became his soul object. It was an unbelievable power object that every day he slept on, and that was his connection for his teacher to really commune with him daily. So basically that, along with other power objects like his shoes, you know, the shoes that Shirdi wore.
The sandals. But how did it get to...
That's a good question, and there's a lot of unanswered questions.
I mean, where did Kaleshwar find the brick?
Well, it was, yeah.
It was given to him
there are a lot of details even I don't know.
Okay.
So those who do know, I just hope and pray that they'll share those details so that we can know more.
He ended up with the shoes too of Shirdi Baba?
Absolutely, and other power objects that he had shared with us, which were so amazing.
Were you able to touch the brick?
Yes, actually I have. I've actually touched the brick physically.
Did you feel something?
I didn't just feel something. And when you are in the presence of real power, there is no mistaking it. If your heart is open, and that's really the key. If your heart's open, you can really feel the energy. And even right now, just thinking about it, I can hear the change in my own voice. It was just so powerful.
So let's talk about who Kaleshwar was. I mean, that was one story, and you know, he did collect power objects, so he had this visitation by Shirdi Baba, and then he was on the spiritual path, but he was more than just on the path. He started to collect a lot of information.
Oh, and that was his life's work. His dharma, and dharma is another word for like right action and your life purpose, doing the right thing, taking the right judgment, was to restore and return the ancient knowledge so that the Westerners could inherit the actual pin codes of the enlightened masters.
What's a pin code? I mean, explain to them.
So a pin code is...
Well, we all know what pin codes are, but tell them what in that way.
Yes. Sure, absolutely. So a pin code is a sacred sound, like Om is the first sound of all of creation and the unity of all things. I mean, there are many meanings, but that's one of them. Namah Shivaya. Those are the five elements. Na, earth. Ma, fire. Shi, sky. Va, water. Ya, air.
Oh, that's why people chant Om Namah Shivaya.
Absolutely. So you're balancing all the five elements in you. All disease and illness is related to an out-of-balance element.
Mm. But also, let's talk about, though, who he is. Because I had this girlfriend who was really into him. And
sure.
So I went to visit her in India.
Great.
Because she was studying with Kaleshwar, because he actually didn't want to be considered a guru, which was what made him different. He said, I want to give you guys the power.
He said, don't worship me. And, you know, he was really saying, any true master does not lead you to themselves. Mm-hmm. They lead you to have your own direct experience of the divine.
Right. So he was interested in creating masters.
Oh, that was his role in creation, was to create Western masters.
And that's why you're carrying on the teachings. You're creating those masters.
Absolutely.
So it's not to worship. He was like a new type of Eastern teacher.
Absolutely.
He totally didn't want to be worshipped.
Bingo.
I know. Just like, I don't think Shirdi wanted to be worshipped either.
No, the real masters are like, hey, see me as your friend.
Well, you know, you are me. You can be this.
Yeah.
You know, even Jesus, it's like, you can do what I can do.
Well, yes. And Jesus said, you will do greater things than me.
Right.
And Shirdi Sai Baba is one of those caretakers of that knowledge that we inherited through Swami Kaleshwar, of those teachings of what Jesus left himself to say, hey, you follow these teachings, you do these practices, you meditate with these mantras and these yantras, and you will be and do greater things than Jesus. And Jesus left books.
He
wrote in his own hand.
He did?
Yes, yes.
What are those books? I haven't heard of
that. Okay, well, oh my gosh. There's a lot of knowledge, and there's been such a distortion of the
truth
for so
long. Where are those Jesus books?
So this is what we studied when I was in India. we literally got to hold and read, and we got to, Swami was translating the ancient palm leaves mm-hmm. that were written. If you go to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre in Jerusalem, which is, mm-hmm. A very holy site for three of the Greek, biggest mm-hmm. world religions, mm-hmm. There is a mosaic. And in that church, you'll see Telugu. Mm-hmm. Now, what is Telugu?
Right. It's another Indian language written, a different type of written language.
Yeah. Right. It's a language native to southern India, mm-hmm. proving a link between Jesus in Jerusalem and southern India.
Wait, how does that prove a link?
Just another piece of evidence.
But where's the Telugu you written in
Jerusalem?
It is where?
In the Church of the Holy Sepulchre.
It is?
Yeah, if you go there.
But that church was built long after Jesus.
Well, but the knowledge and even the power and even the representations of the resurrection, there's the energy is still there.
Right, okay. So you're saying there's Telugu in that?
Yeah, there's Telugu. I mean, it's just, okay. Even if you're the biggest skeptic and you're like, oh, so what? There's Telugu. Don't worry. In the future, more evidence is going to come out. Scientific evidence. That's, Telugu, that's just one teeny piece. There are many other pieces of this puzzle that as it comes out, it's going to prove that Jesus was in India and not just in India, but Jesus lived in India and what he did, where he went. And
He was crucified.
And before, before and after.
Okay. But okay, so I was going back to my initial visit to
Panaconda
to meet Swami Kaleshwar, was to visit this friend of mine, this girlfriend of mine. But I was also going to meet because this teacher who was pretty amazing. I heard lots of stories about him. And so I didn't know but he was young. He was
very young.
When I met him, he was 27.
But an old, ancient soul.
Right. So I was wondering, I have a lot of judgment about people who call themselves teachers and gurus and
sure.
all that. So I went there not knowing what to think. But I met him, but we had a moment, actually the first moment we looked at each other, we just smiled at each other.
Aww.
There was a recognition in that first moment. He wasn't doing anything superior or anything like that. And I liked him immediately. And it seemed like he liked me. We had an instant connection. We had an instant nice. Acknowledgement of each other's God being.
Nice.
And from that moment on, we were friends. We were friends. I wasn't the best student there. I didn't do the mantra. I mean, this sure. person I knew did a million mantras,
Oh, yeah, there are people who did multiple millions of mantras.
I know. That I think it took like, it's a science just to count them.
Oh, yes. Yes,
just
it
to
is.
Count. Did you do a million mantras?
I'm sure I've done many more than 1 million mantras.
Right. So then of course there, he had that ashram in Panaconda, India for about, well, I guess from like 1998, 6.
It's a good question. I mean, it's been building over the years.
Yes, and now it's beautiful. But of course, he's no longer around. Do we want to talk about, not maybe what happens, because no one really knows what happened, but he left.
And he left his body and he consciously said, in a few days, I will be no more. And
he said that.
He said that.
Did you hear him say that?
I was in the ashram until a few days before he left his body. Mm. And so it was so wonderful. He had prepared us for the time. But I feel like there's so much more to who he is that people don't fully recognize. Even when he was there, imagine like even when Jesus was alive, not even the disciples who were like around him even recognized the power of who Jesus really was. And they still doubted, some of them. And they were like seeing miracles and learning the technology of how to do miracles, yet still were doubting. And even in front of Swami, he would manifest ash, literally out of what looked like thin air. He would show an open hand and prove that there's nothing, up his sleeve, and then close his eye, or he would, wave it, a few times in a circular fashion, and then open up his hand, or gems would appear, or he would transport an object, or ash would flow from his fingers.
It is pretty amazing.
I mean, it's awesome.
I saw that too.
Yeah,
it was like,
I saw
how did that?
Yeah.
How does that happen?
Good question. And when you're in the middle of witnessing a miracle, that's the moment afterwards. It's a small window.
Well, you know,
we got to catch to ask the mechanism.
But when you're watching it, it seems like perfectly natural. It's
yes.
Like, isn't that interesting?
It's
like
it totally
it's
does.
Like, of course, that seems reasonable. And then afterwards, you say, how did that actually? Because
right.
I saw him do like this whole thing of ash across this room.
Right.
Just kind of like explode across. But so what is Vibhuti?
Okay, so Vibhuti is the combination of all the five elements in one, of the earth, fire, sky, water, and air. Uh-huh. If you think about it, when you burn wood with the element of fire and you need air to fill the fire, and you need space for that fire to burn, and the water element helped grow that tree, everything is contained in it. And so that ash is unbelievable power, is like very powerful.
But how does it manifest like that out of nowhere?
That's the stuff you got to stick around to learn. And it's not something you get in 5 minutes.
Are you learning that? Is just something you want to do?
No, this is the stuff we learned in India. And so you learn how to pull the energy and do miracles. And Swami said the greatest miracle is when you can help others and heal others. And I have, again, it's not me doing the miracle.
Right.
But countless miracles have flowed through me through this work.
Through you?
Through
like what kind of miracles?
Well, there was one guy who was in a wheelchair for many years.
I just want to say, and this legacy that Swami left of certain mantras and certain healing vibrations or pin codes, as he called it, was to do these kind of healings and miracles. So yes, what happened? Did you see?
Well, there's a few of them. I'll let you choose. There's one about a wheelchair or brain tumors.
Whatever. What was the first one you were going to say?
Sure. So there was a guy who was in a wheelchair, and I just had this thought, I would love, he's been in there, and he's had this desire to walk, and for many, you're just confined in a wheelchair for the rest of your life. You're not thinking you can ever get out of it. Well, one day I just followed my heart and I just said,
hey. Is this someone you knew who was studying with you?
No, he was not studying with me. This was just somebody that I saw who was a friend of a friend. And
so you said one day, hey.
And I went up to him and I just kind of introduced what I do or what I learned, and I invited him. I said, would you like a healing? Would you like to receive, a healing? Mm-hmm. Now, normally I don't approach people. Normally I wait for them to ask me, but the energy was very strong and it was like, oh no, go, because this is at the very beginning. And so he said, sure. So long story short, we worked together, and it wasn't just one and done. Sometimes it has been where miracles have manifested instantaneously, mm-hmm. but this was one that took a few sessions, and, he was able to walk. I mean, they told him
what did you actually do for him? What was the process?
Good question. So I implemented the healing techniques that I had learned through the five elements.
And what were those?
And many of these other processes.
So what did you do with this one person, for instance? What were the actual healing techniques?
Well, these are all the pin codes.
The mantras.
These are the mantras.
So
here's the thing. You learn the techniques by charging these mantras. So you charge and pull unbelievable energy into your soul. And then you open yourself up as an instrument of the divine. And through these pin codes, imagine them like phone numbers. So you're dialing these different vibrations through these pin codes, combining it and multiplying the energy 1,000 times more with form. So you pull a yantra. So it's mantra plus yantra.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was what I use, a mantra plus a yantra. And I have a power spot. That's something we haven't really talked about yet.
You have your own power spot?
Yeah. It's like an energy bank account, if you will, on a soul level.
Is it a place you go, a physical place?
Good question. Yes, there is a physical place. But, and mine is, and the number one place for power spots is in Penaconda, India.
Is it?
Yes. So if you want to do the healings like Jesus and do greater things like Buddha and like these amazing divine souls, you can get a power. Anyone can get a power spot in Penaconda. Everyone who's listening is invited to get one in Penaconda. And I lead people on journeys to learn what's a power spot and how do you use it and what's it for and what's the pin code of your power spot, because there's so much knowledge around that. That's important to know.
So is your power spot just in Penaconda, India, or do you have others power spots?
No comment. So let's just say my power spot's in Penaconda.
So you have to go to Penaconda to get in that power spot?
To create one, you go there. But once you learn how to soul travel, you don't have to physically go there
anymore. Go there on a soul travel level.
So as I do healings in the West, basically I connect with my power spot in India. I connect with my birth mother and my mom and my dad. Even though my mom's passed, I connect with them on a soul level. My dad's still physically alive, but I connect in my heart. And that doorway to the divine, connecting also through the lineage of enlightened masters, I connect with Kalishwar and Chirti Baba and my heart, Jesus. And I pull the energy supernaturally, connect with the Divine Mother, because truly the highest healing is learning how to go back to the universal womb of the Divine Mother.
And really? Is that the highest healing?
Mm-hmm.
And is there a mantra for doing that?
There are many mantras. And then you start, in order to get there, you got to start with the five elements. And so to get there, you got to build the energy. It's like trying to put a roof on a house before you've even laid the foundation. You got to start, you know, and build the energy and then pull it. So in the healing with this particular guy, or there was another healing with, you know, others, basically who've received unbelievable physical miracles. There was a Reiki master who came to me who was a police officer, and she was coming for a heart healing, for a massive heartbreak. And after the end of the healing, she was in tears, and she was like, not sad tears, but happy tears. And she confided in me that she had been shot many years ago and wounded and was, you know, on a form of disability for what had happened to her. In the line of duty. And she said, I have been to many healers and I've had chronic pain in my chest for many years and no one's been able to heal it. And she said, I didn't even tell you that I had this problem. And that pain disappeared during this healing. How did you do that?
So Swami Kalishwar left these pin codes, this energy, these syllables, these
mantras,
right?
And mantras.
But what was his, or what would you say was his overall message, his overall teaching?
Good question. There are help ever, hurt never. Anyone and everyone can have this and do this. Everyone is equal.
Right. So that was his overall message. But then some people would even say, not black magic, but he used power.
Oh, let's be very clear. There was no black negative energy that he utilized.
He never used
it. In fact, he said this, if anyone even tries to use these divine powers for evil or negative purposes, he said, you will automatically lose your powers. You cannot use it to harm or hurt, period, or instantaneously all your power, not even just what you used in that instance. It's gone. So consider it hasta la vista. So you can only use it for the good. It is only to help. These are the enlightenment channels. These are the divine enlightenment channels that are used to help humanity.
So Swami got these channels, these mantras through meditation, or were they ancient secrets that he discovered?
Well, on multiple levels. Okay, so he received some of them verbally from saints. Some of them he inherited through ancient palm leaf books that he was entrusted with. He was able to pull and form and see divine souls who directly communicated and gave him in full darshan. It's just like when Shirdi appeared to him at 14. I mean, Shirdi didn't appear as an apparition. He appeared
physically
in a form, in a body. And so at high levels, imagine, guys, you can do this too. You can pull divine souls and see them. And those divine souls give you things, can tell you things and teach you things. And so he inherited many things that way.
I see. So then, okay, so he got this visitation at 14, started to open up spiritually. And then he started an ashram.
By the age of 18.
The age of 18.
Yep, is when he was,
were the beginnings
of the ashram, is when he was told by an enlightened master that your dharma, can you imagine, you're a teenage boy and being told you're going to be a guru and your job is to teach Western students the ancient knowledge.
So his job was to teach Western, not necessarily Indians.
He did start with everybody, Indians and Westerners, but his dharma was with the Westerners.
Well, Indians make people into gurus, and the Westerners were more open, I think, to learning the science, because he would say this is a science.
Oh, believe me, the Indians love the knowledge too, but they already have it. Swami said they already have the knowledge.
So, okay, so at 18 he started an ashram, and then I met him at 27, and then he kept going, went, and he left in 2012?
2012, March 15th.
Okay, yes. And how old was he?
39. I mean, again, you're look the 39, you think, yes, we all probably judge and say that's a, such a young age. But the truth is, when you have come and you fulfill the purpose of why you are here, done. Now, granted, some things for some people, they leave sooner than they're supposed to. But on a whole, most people, it's like even Swami said, I was there that night. It was in early March of 2012. We were in the what's called the Baba Mandir, and we were watching a movie called Manjunatha. And so,
well, what kind of movie was that?
It was a movie about a guru who had taken off, and I it was see. A story of what he did, and he sent his like closest devotees
oh,
away.
Oh, you watched that a few times, that movie, right?
Yeah, he had us watch it like four times okay. within a few weeks. It
was okay, kind of funny. So you watched that movie.
He was trying to teach us something, though, well, and preparing us. And that night, the fourth time we watched it, he said, 100%, my mission is complete. Or something to that effect. But basically it was, but he said those words, 100% my work is done.
Did you get what he was saying?
Yes. In that moment, my consciousness, I was aware. I was like, oh my gosh, he can leave now, because nobody can leave unless you have fulfilled why you've come here. And it was kind of one of those moments like, oh my gosh, now I didn't know how much longer he would be around. And little did I know it would only be a matter of a few days. But it was powerful. Not everybody wow. understood. I mean, it was in the course of a very casual conversation that we were together.
Mm-hmm.
And it was late at night and people were tired and we'd seen this movie already so many times. And not everyone understood, including myself, 100% of why we were there or what we were doing or how he was really preparing us.
So, I mean, I think we could outline maybe the complexity of his teachings. I mean, could you do a kind of overview of that? He laid out the first thing was the five element mantras.
Absolutely.
And by doing these mantras, which are not just repeating sounds, they're like you're saying, they're accessing a high intention. Talk about that.
Great question. Mm-hmm. So, okay. Meditation. What is meditation? There are different forms and kinds of meditation. I call this path the Olympics of meditation. And I believe that everything that we've all done has prepared us for this moment. If you're listening now, it means that your vibration has to be, you know, probably higher than average. Because mm-hmm. to get to this level of enlightenment pin codes, you have to raise your vibration to even attract this knowledge. And so it all starts with the five elements to tune your soul. So meditation on this path, yes, silence is absolutely a part of it. But this is also a path about pulling these pin codes of these sacred sounds with these sacred forms, or the face of a divine soul can be a yantra as well. And so you combine the two together. You close your two eyes, you face an auspicious direction. Mm-hmm. Auspicious is positive, and the best directions to face while meditating is either north, east, or northeast. And you want to sit and be comfortable. And so a lot of people have been taught to sit in certain positions. And, you know, for certain types of meditations, yes, those are perhaps prescriptions. But on the highest path, eventually it becomes just be comfortable. And so you want to relax your body and relax your mind. Because when you sit in tension and you're uncomfortable, you're just thinking about your leg that's being pinched and the tingling pins and needles in your legs. You know, you got to be comfortable. So go ahead.
No, I continue, because then I wanted you to do maybe a mantra that people can hear.
Sure.
One of maybe Kaleshwar's mantras.
I'd be delighted.
Okay, but yeah, finish telling them about.
So basically, so you're facing a positive direction. Here's the next piece that a lot of people have been never taught or missed, is if you are wanting to pull in divine energy, what you want to do is not have any bare skin touching the earth.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Why?
Because what's happening is when your bare skin is touching the earth, automatically the earth element magnetizes energy, right? We're, by the law of gravity, we are pulled to the earth.
Oh.
And so the earth is constantly, it's pulling, nature is pulling our energy into it. So both positive and negative when your bare feet are on the ground. And that could also go for if you're We're talking about inside a house, not just on the grass or the sand or the dirt. Mm. Okay. So if you are meditating and you're bare skinned, the positive energy you're pulling in goes directly to the ground, not in you. And part of this path is learning all of the different ways of this is the technology the Light and Masters of learning how to pull and hold
pull,
divine energy.
And you pull with intention?
You pull with intention. You start with opening mantras, and then you pull ultimately with those pin codes, mm-hmm. plus those yantras, the sacred mantra plus yantra. That's the
yantra
formula.
Is the sacred symbols, or they're like designs.
The sacred geometry.
Geometry.
Okay,
yes.
So like the symbol of the cross, that's an easy one that is actually a yantra. It's the personal yantra of Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. Or the triangle of somebody else. I mean, triangles. I mean, there's lots of different.
But there are certain forms that are specific to souls, and you want to know what form goes with what soul.
And everyone has their own personal yantra.
Bingo. And In this path, that's one of the things that you discover for yourself, or you learn to discover for yourself, is what is your personal yantra, and you never show or share it to anybody. It's like a personal.
No.
There's certain things you hold for yourself. But I use, for example, my personal yantra when I'm giving a healing to somebody. I'm drawing it in my third eye, in my spiritual eye.
And if you want to accomplish something or have an intention, you could use your personal yantra to empower your intention. So you're thinking of something, and a personal yantra could just be even like a doodle that comes to you.
No.
Because it feels like that to me. Not like a doodle, but it feels like a certain form comes to me.
Okay.
Tell me.
There are certain, now this is where a lot of the ancient knowledge has been lost.
Okay.
Because I was up in near Mount Shasta, or at Mount Shasta, there was an exhibit going on, and some guy was displaying some yantras, these sacred geometric shapes, but he had inserted his own shapes into them, and it completely, you lose the energy if you mm-hmm. move the lines around and change it. You want to keep the integrity of the form, so it contains the power. If you really have those secret pin codes that we're now revealing with the blessings and permission of these divine souls, who this energy is directly relating to, you can create an unbelievable, high divine energy.
But what about your own personal yantra? That's
the penultimate. So you meditate until one day you see the same shape start to appear in your third eye for like a month straight. Mm. Same shape. Their personal yantra is no more than 9 lines. Like, I used to write for the Whole Person magazine, and I have a whole bunch of articles on my website at toloveallserveall.com. And on there is like the different 5 keys that you need, and one of those is the personal yantra. And I go the depth if you want to know more about that subject and about even the subjects we're talking about. It's amazing how much knowledge has been hidden or held for so long that's now accessible to all of us.
Okay, so go into that process you were describing about the, but we'll say some mantras. We'll help people tune in. If they're listening, they can maybe hook the energy as well.
Oh, I love that.
Which is what Swami used to talk about, hooking the energy.
Absolutely.
Which means you're not just saying it, you're actually feeling it, and you're feeling the power of it.
Bingo, because if you try to meditate with your mind, go play basketball, or go do something fun in the nature. Don't waste your time. Like, really, meditation is truly God's secrets work through the heart. And you got to open up, you got to relax. And if you do it right, you'll feel the energy. If you're not doing right, you're probably not feeling anything. And if you've been meditating for 30 years, it's a soul crime to have no experiences. And part of that is learning and receiving these channels yourself, to have your own direct, amazing, awesome experiences.
Mm.
I mean, I've lost track now of how many times I've experienced divine souls directly. Oh, yeah.
You have?
Yeah.
You've had visitations?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You
Not
have.
Just visitations. Conversations.
You have.
Oh, my gosh. It's wonderful.
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
like, what kind of conversation?
I don't really talk about it much, but, it just came up.
Well, so. I do see your Kuan Yin statue looks very animated.
And I lead people to have their own direct experiences, too. Like, we just
have you met the Mother Divine?
Oh, yes,
you have
more than once.
Okay,
and in fact, one of my students told me a couple days ago, on the full moon, that the Divine Mother appeared to her in the form of Mahakali, and somebody else saw Mother Mary, and somebody else, what was it, last Thursday, told me that they saw Kalishwar.
Really?
And on the Jesus retreat, you know, people had direct experiences of seeing Jesus. So absolutely, the energy can show up in different ways for divine souls, and it starts, you know, it can start with, like, in the form of a dream where you see them. Or you can maybe hear the jingling of like bangles, and that's one of the sounds of the Divine Mother. Or you smell a divine fragrance, letting you know that there's a divine angel in the room. And you can have that moment to connect with that soul and pull their energy in you and ask them to stay and show you and talk to you and commune with you. Oh my heck, this is so much fun when you get to do this.
How do you know? I mean, so they actually do come. You actually
sense them. Oh, you don't just sense them. You see them with your eyes open.
Really? You've seen this?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And or in, even if you're meditating, you can hear them. You're having a, just like we're having a conversation. You have conversations with them, and you have, it's this kind of clarity in which you can hear them.
Right. So let's do like a little mantra so people can maybe hook the energy and start to feel, you know, what it's like to tap into those frequencies. So what's like a famous Kalishwar mantra that we
got? Good question. So let's start with the opening mantras. And optimally, whenever you sit to meditate, you're welcome to listen, and you can record these mantras and replay them.
We'll do this mantra and then we will wrap up because
Om Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu, Guru Devo Maheshwaraha, Guru Sakshat Parabrahmam, Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. Om Suklam Bharadaram Vishnum Sashivaranam Chaturbhujam Prasannavaranam Dhyaye Sarva Vignopashantaye Om Bhubhuva Suvaha Tat Savitovarinyam Bhargo Devasya Dhimahi Tiyo Yonaha Prachodayat. Om Sai Shri Sai Jai Jai Sai Ishvara Kaleshvara Parameshvara Parameshvara. So either one of those last two are some really powerful mantras you can take. The first one relates directly to Shirdi Baba, who's a grandfather to all in creation, who's the head of the divine court now. And it's Om Sai Shri Sai Jai Jai Sai.
Well, this has been amazing. We've just really began to touch on to the magic of Kalishwar, his legacy, what he left behind. What's his website?
Kalishwar.org.
K-A-L-E-S-H-W-A-R. Yeah. And your website, how can people get in touch with you?
Sure. www.toloveallserveall, TOLOVEALLSERVEALL.com.
And my website, newrealities.com. That's kalishwar.org. I'm Alan Steinfeld here with Julianne
Boyce-Bukovchik.
Boyce Bachapke, teacher of the Kalishwar information. If you have any information, check out her website.
Yeah, if you're in LA, visit us. We do full and new moon events, do retreats. I lead people to the power spots in India and do classes and more and private sessions to anyone in the world via distance.
Yes, it's great stuff. It's powerful and it works because I've had some experiences. Thank you for listening tonight. This is New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and tune in next week. Thank you.